Okay, Boker Tov, I think we can get started. Okay, welcome to class 118. After last week, we had sort of breaks, say, for Mitzvot, because different time zone. So we're hopefully, I never like to say when we're going to finish, but I can tell you where we'll start. Hopefully, we'll get through most of the second paragraph of the Shema. We were talking last week about, or 2 weeks ago. Okay, Hishamru Lachem, be very careful, because if you don't keep the Mitzvot, God is going to exile you from the land. That's basically in issues of theodicy. When does God punish? How does God punish? We don't know why God punishes. And we basically, I think the most important point is that we, especially since the period of prophecy has ended 2,500 years ago, we have no idea why God punishes us. And we're not supposed to ask the question why. We're supposed to ask the question for what purpose. In other words, that things are happening. So we want to know why, what can we learn from them, but not to say that this is what caused the X to happen. And that's why we explained that the destruction of the second temple, even though most people stop them on the street, they'll tell you it happened because of hatred of Sinat Chinam. That's the, everybody talks about on Tisha B'Av. That's not the, there are 10 other reasons in the Talmud why the second temple was destroyed. Because no, it was destroyed because the Romans were interested in expanding the world, and they were the, that's why it was destroyed. There are historical reasons. But each rabbi saw a particular message they should learn. Of course, it's, in other words, if the people are weak and fighting, so it's easier for an enemy to conquer them. But they're not like drawing a direct line. I think that's a very dangerous thing to do, especially nowadays. No, because of this, this is happening is that's a hubris and arrogance that we have no right to say. At the same time, the Rambam does point out, I don't know if I mentioned this in the beginning of Hilchot Ta'anit, that when their sorrows are happening, we have to examine ourselves just to say, okay, that's the way the world is. That's also a terrible idea. So that's what I'm saying. Everybody has to look for what they can understand as the message they can take from what's going on. Obviously, it's a very important thing for us right now. Okay, but I want to move on today. So God will get angry. If you have your Siddur in front of you, you know it by heart, the Karaf Hashem, God will get angry. And therefore, you should put this on your heart and put on tefillin and all that other stuff. What in the world is the connection? What is the connection that God will get angry? He'll exile you from the land, and you should put on tefillin. Right? Isn't that what it says in the Torah? Just let's go. I might as well share my screen for 1 second, just in case you don't have it with you. Go right here. Right? What does it say? The Torah tells us. Where are we going here? Why can't I see what I'm doing? Because my thing is blocked. Okay, here we go. The Charaf Hashem, God will get angry and he'll throw us out. Right? Va'avadeta me'ra, you'll quickly be thrown out of the land, the good land, Arta Tova. Put these things, whatever these are, okay. Ukshartam, put on your tefillin, both on your hand and your head. That's only for men, apparently. We spoke about that a number of weeks ago. And you should teach your children. Very similar. This is already now we're basically repeating what we have in the first paragraph of the Shema and have and put a mezuzah. What in the world is the connection between those two? Anybody?
I don't know, maybe that's the
You're going
reason
to
why.
exile, therefore put on tefillin. What?
Well, it sounds like maybe cause and effect. Maybe
I'm
that
sorry.
was, maybe it's cause and effect. The reason why you were ousted from the
Okay.
land is maybe you put on tefillin, but you didn't put it on with the right kavana, because it goes on to say v'samtem es dvarim al levavchem. So, okay.
I know that's hard to say because the Torah, this is after we've been exiled. In other words, the Torah says, if you don't listen, it's not, and you don't listen in general, God will get angry. And he's not listening to put on tefillin. So how come all the women are exiled? I mean, they don't have to put on tefillin. So, they shouldn't be exiled, right? That's a little bit strange. So, yeah, anybody?
I think the text is trying to say that that won't happen. He's now giving you two choices: the good things that'll happen and the bad things that will happen. And now he's saying, place these upon your hand so that only the good things will happen. I think that's the message.
By putting on tefillin, we'll come back to the land of Israel. I don't know. I find it a little bit hard to think that putting on tefillin is the mitzvah that's most going to get us back to the land of Israel or a mezuzah or even teaching Torah. In other words, it's like God will get angry. He'll exile you from the land. Put this on your heart. So presumably, Sandavari Eila Alevavchem is not about tefillin. It's about this whole concept that if you keep the mitzvot, you will be punished. You'll be rewarded. If you don't keep the mitzvot, you'll be punished. And then the door says, and put on tefillin on your hand, on your head, and put on a mezuzah on your door, and teach your children. So there's some sort of direct connection between exile and the mitzvah of tefillin and a mezuzah, which of course have nothing to do with the land of Israel. Those mitzvot apply, maybe that's why, because those mitzvot apply outside of Israel. You can't do truma master. So let's take a look at Rashi. I mean, you know, we like Rashi. So Rashi has, it's a blow your mind. Now, I think your screen is different than mine. I'll do that here. Right. Besandra Vraila. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, why is this not working? Rashi Mefarshim, okay, Rashi. The son of Raila, Afla Harsha Tiglu, Heyu Mitsunim Bimitzvot. Even after you are exiled, you should do mitzvot. Put on tefillin, make Heinichu tefillin, as Mrs. Kadesh Yulahem Chadashim Kishetachzuru. You know, you're going to be exiled from the land. And even though you're exiled, you don't think you don't have to keep mitzvot anymore. I might have thought I don't have to keep mitzvot. So the Torah says I should put on tefillin, I should make a mezuzah. Why? Why should I do this? Because it's important? That's not really important. In order that when you come back to the land of Israel, you won't be out of practice. In other words, really, you don't have to put on tefillin in Chutz Laretz. Really, you don't have to put a mezuzah. You don't have to do mitzvot in Chutz Laretz. But you're going to come back after 1900 years. You're not going to know what to do. Like, we don't know how to observe Shemitah exactly. We don't know how to do a lot of the mitzvot in the Torah because we were out of practice. So God doesn't want us to be out of practice for these mitzvot. So, Keshetachzeru, V'cheinu Omer, what's the pasuk in Yirmiyahu? Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph is where he tells us we're going to be in Babel. And you should build homes there and you should live there and pray for the welfare of the government. You're going to live in exile and live a normal life. Don't sit there.
It's interesting that this.
Hold on 1 second. Put for you markers. That's what the Rashi says. The Ramban develops this idea. Even after you go into exile, have mitzvot around you, and you could fill in mezuzahs, etc. Quotes Rashi. Maybe I'll do it in English, may just make it easier. Put on tefillin. And so this is Rashi's language. Now, I've already written on the meaning of this matter that these commandments mentioned are personal, right? They have nothing to do with the land of Israel. As such, their laws apply in all places of the land, but there's a midrash, a profound secret, and I've already alluded to it. Etc. Basically, what the Ramban, that the secret, at least he says initially, is the mitzvot and chutz laretz are just practice. So this is like a very Zionistic, when I first heard this when I was 18 and I arrived in Yeshivat HaKotel, and I remember mitzvot and chutz laretz are only practice when we come back to Israel. So like everything, it's not so simple. If you leave the shir now, that's not a good idea. I mean, you want to leave the shir, you can leave the shir, but then don't quote. Because you only get half the story. Like a lot of rabbinic statements, they need to be expounded upon or see maybe they're only one opinion. But that's what Rashi, quoting the Midrash, says, that even though we're going to be in exile, you should keep the mitzvot. So when you come back, you won't be out of practice. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. The Sifri, it's based on Sifri. It's like astounding, really, if you think about it. And of course, you realize this is the exact opposite of secular Zionism. Now you begin to understand why rabbis didn't like secular Zionism, for those few, the Mizrahi rabbis there. But many rabbis, although the Mizrahi was a movement, but bigger than it is now. But secular Zionism's argument was that mitzvah were only for Chutz Laretz. That was the classic secular Zionist approach. that knew when we lived in Chutzlar, we lived in diaspora, we the only way to keep our Judaism, Kashrut, Shabbos. But now that we're back, we're a nation. We're not just, we're not a religion really anymore. So we don't need the mitzvot. And the Torah here seems to be saying the exact opposite. That the goal of mitzvot is really meant for the land of Israel. And of course it's true. In exile, it's, you have the Torah. It doesn't apply, right? It's one of the, you know, we tend to focus on the personal mitzvot. Even in Israel, they tend to do that, I think. But there's all of Sefer Dvarim and so much else of the Torah that deals with mitzvot that no individual can do. How to set up a government, how to run an economy, perhaps is more important than many of the mitzvot personal, because that allows us to express our national identity. That allows us to be an Or LaGoyim. We're not going to impress anybody. You put on tefillin, big deal. Like, I'm not saying big deal, but it doesn't have any impact outside of your own personal connection to God, which is important. But that's not the goal of the Torah, or that's not, maybe a goal, but it's not the overarching goal of the Torah. The overarching goal of the Torah is to set up a model state where we're going to be, we're going to be amazing people. And, nations are going to want to copy us. I'll show it again. I love this verse. I mean, it's a very important verse, and I've mentioned it before. We don't pay enough attention to it, but I didn't make it up. It's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. So here, let's just find it. It's Dvarim 4:6. I should know the verse because I like to quote it. This is the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Moshe is about to give a long, long speech to the Jewish people. And Moshe says, very nice. Moshe, what's happened to the Jewish people? You know, those who worship idols, they were destroyed, and all these, only those who are, who keep the mitzvot can be close to God, and God will reward them, etc. So Moshe says, you see, I've taught you chukim mishpatim, I've taught you, various types of mitzvot that God has commanded. Okay, we won't go into the difference chukim mishpatim, that's not really important. Ushmartem vasitem, why should you keep these mitzvot? Because this will be your wisdom in front of the nations of the world. Asher yishmuna kol chukim eila, they will hear all these laws. Vamru, they'll say, wow, those Jewish people, they are so smart. What an unbelievable nation. The greatest laws in the world. Look how smart in the understanding, Chacham v'Navon, Kimi Goy Gadol. No other nation is so great that God is close to him, like our God, that we can call out to him. Wow, God gave us this tremendous system, and the nations of the world are going to be blown away. And if you remember, we mentioned in the past, this is the source, the Talmud, based on this source, says that Jews have to study science. I'm not going to quote the Gemara now. We've done that. Jews, the Gemara, and in Shabbat 75, you look it up, 75A, that they have to study science, astrology, mathematics, in other words, whatever the wisdom of the day. The Gemara says, what impresses non-Jews? What impresses non-Jews is science, mathematics, so that's what Jews have to study. Technology, so every generation, we have to impress the non-Jews and show how we have to win Nobel Prizes. When we win a Nobel Prize, that's a fulfillment of that verse, right? Basically, that's what the Torah is saying. It's an amazing thing, but it's really very, it's very central to the idea of what we develop, what Yishayahu develops, it will be an Or LaGoyim. That's really the purpose of why, God, is giving us all these mitzvot. So those mitzvot are, the nation of the world are not going to be impressed by tefillin and mezuzah. They're going to be impressed by our social justice system, our economic system, mindset, technology, development, etc. That's why I've mentioned also, where now we're talking about the Exodus, we're talking Shemot, that's why we had to be slaves in Egypt, right? I've explained before, maybe not. I'm not asking a question why we had to be slaves. That's a separate question. Why do we have to be slaves in Egypt? Why couldn't we be slaves in who knows where? In Canaan, why can't we just be slaves in Canaan? Then we'd break free and we'd start our own government. Well, why do we need to be slaves in Egypt?
It was the biggest empire of the day.
Most advanced empire. You're right. So we had to learn from Egypt the good things. We have to learn not to do the bad things, but we have to learn the good things. So that's the goal of Torah. So that can only be done in the land of Israel. That's very hard to do, although we'll see in a moment not so fast. But that can only be done as you. I'll take one more thing. I'll point out, Yocheved, and then I'll take your question. So there's another thing. We read it last week's Parsha. When I only noticed this for the first time in my life a couple years ago. And when I noticed it, I was like basically blown away. I find it amazing. And maybe you can help me explain the meaning. Okay, God comes to Moshe at the burning bush. And God says, we just read this, of course. I'm the God of your fathers. Who knows what Moshe knows? So does Moshe know the God of his father? What does he know? He grew up in an Egyptian palace. He's been living with the priest of Midian. I said, like he's for 50 years. And, you know, what does he know about that? He probably doesn't have even a brief milah. That's going to be the story later on. He's like totally assimilated to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's very far from Moshe Rabbeinu at this point. So God tells him, you know, I'm the Lord of your, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I don't know if you've heard of them, maybe. And Moshe just gets all, you know, okay, this is too much. He wants to hide. And God tells Moshe, I see the suffering of the Jewish people. They're crying out. It's very terrible. And I'm going to go and I'm going to save them. And what am I going to do? I'm going to take them out of the land of Egypt into Eretz Tovar Chava, good white lands, about flowing with milk and honey. The place where right now the Knani, Chiti, Amori, Perizi, Chiti, Nivusi are living there. What's missing? What's missing in this verse?
Give the Torah.
Sinai, yeah, isn't that cool? So when I first learned, I was like blown away. I thought we left Egypt, right? Isn't that what everybody learns in school? And you say, you know, Pesach and Shavuos, we count Sphira because, you know, it doesn't really count just to get out of Egypt. We have to have our mission. The whole purpose of the Exodus is to go get the Torah. That's not what God says. God says the whole purpose of the Exodus is to go to the land of Israel. I'm not saying, okay, maybe you'll get thrown away, but the fact that you would think you'd mention the most important thing. The important thing was not to go to Sinai. The important thing was to go to the land of Israel. Now,
when does Sinai come in? That later?
Hold on. Yeah, of course. It does come up.
Yeah,
hold on. It's coming up right now. So
Yehoshua also doesn't mention it. Before he died. Yehoshua also doesn't mention it.
Doesn't mention what? Torah? This I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't know what yeah. Yehoshua died, the look of in the end of Yehoshua. Okay, I don't know.
At
Thank
the end,
you.
The Perakaf died.
So Moshe says, meet me and Ochi. Actually, if you want to, on my podcast this week, I think I speak to me and Ochi. Moshe says, who am I? It doesn't mean just who am I? Like, why am I worthy to go to Egypt? It means who? I don't know who I am. Am I Egyptian? Am I Jew? Me and Ochi. Moshe himself is torn. Is he Egyptian? Remember when the daughters of Reuel, that's the see him, Ish Mitri, Itzilanu. Who am I? I don't even know what I am to go get God. So then God, okay, I'll tell you what to do. We need a little trick here. So you're going to tell Paro that you're going to worship God on this mountain. Right now, what should I tell? So he says to him, go over there. I'm going to do that now. But that's sort of, I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but even this verse, go for 3 days. Is that true? Right? So Moshe, okay, what am I going to tell them? So Moshe says, get the 70 people and tell them we're going to land of Israel. Now we're getting the Torah. Aleichem, we're going to land of Israel. And they're going to listen. And then it's what you tell Paro. It's not what you tell the Jewish people. Yeah. We need an excuse for Paro. So Paro, why don't you go to Israel? Are you crazy? Egypt is the best country in the world. We're the most advanced country in the world. Why would some idiot want to leave Egypt and go to Israel? Oh, no. It's a religious reason. That's different. So you have to tell Melech Mitzrayim that the God of the Hebrews has called upon us and we have to go 3 days in the desert. Is that true? Are they only going to go to 3 days in the desert? And they're going to come back? The Rashbam, I once read
that it makes it more palatable for Paro. Had he said, I'm taking them out, Paro would have thrown him out and he would have been a laughing stock.
Paro would have said yes to Moshe. You can go for 3 days. What would happen? Would they have come back after 3 days? Was he lying? We're not giving a partridge here so much, but I'm just... And my point here, I mean, it's a very important question. You can think about it. We can discuss it another time. But if you look the Torah is left out of the equation. It's just, and I was astounded. You never really notice it because it comes up later, but if you look at it carefully, so I don't know exactly, but there is some, clearly, I mean, I think in one way we can understand it, which is good for like the non-religious Zionist, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, there's an idea to live in Israel divorced from mitzvot. Obviously, listen, we have other verses. Everything is complicated. You can never just look at one source, obviously, and it's multi-dimensional. But because other sources doing sins in the land of Israel are worse, doing sins, God will get angry.
They did it.
You know, you're in the poke.
Get to the blood clinic at 10. You need to leave at 9:45.
I'm sorry, hold on. No, I didn't just mute yourself, I think. So what was I saying? I just lost my that to do sins in the land of Israel may be even worse. But here, there's an idea to live in Israel. That's why we came out. Mitzvot is very nice, and it's just very interesting. But the point is that what the verse, at least according to the Sifri, implies is Rashi basically says it black and white. We do mitzvot in chutz la'aretz, even mitzvot that are not dependent on the land, as practice. So when we come back, we will be able to properly fulfill the mitzvot. This is just an amazing statement. We'll see, is that accepted? Yocheved, do you still want to ask your question?
Yeah, just a quick one. So why then these two mitzvot are singled out? Like, why not Shabbos?
That's an interesting question. You know what? I don't know. I didn't focus on that. Yeah, I don't know. I've actually looked at why those. I mean, it's the first paragraph. I mean, you know, I'm going to say something radical. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know if it's true. On that basis, tefillin may be only a drush, may not be the simple meaning of the verse. The verse may mean put these ideas in your heart and in your, you know, head. And in other words, think about it, act upon it. This broader idea. Then the halakha took that and on an additional level of I don't know if this is correct, on an additional level of interpretation, tied it into tefillin, right? I think there were people in the Middle Ages, you know, the not exactly Karaites, but people, you know, who read the verse, where do you get the tefillin from this verse? It's an idea that you have to think about it. Now it says tie it on your hand. So I don't know, that does imply you're actually tying something. But I don't know exactly why these mitzvot, but whatever the case may be, you see that there's a link between you're going to chutz la'aretz, you have to keep mitzvot. And that's, like I said, when I first came to Israel, you know, they teach you this, and okay, it's true. But, you know, as you get a little older, I sort of look at it in a broader perspective. Obviously, living in Israel, you know, there's something beautiful. That's why God took us out, even more than the mitzvot. God took us out of Egypt, so we're going to land of Israel. Now, if you tie it into what I'm saying in Dvarim, that the purpose of the mitzvot is to impress the nations of the world, we best impress the nations of the world only when we have a national state, not by putting on tefillin, but by doing mitzvot, our general thing. So that's why it's so important to live in Israel. We can only fulfill our national mission when we set up a government. On your personal level, you can fulfill your personal goals and mission by doing mitzvot wherever you live. But as a Jewish people, as a people, that obviously can only be done in Israel. And that's the, you know, what we assume. Okay, question. Janine, well, yes.
When you have to stop.
I'm sorry?
When you have to stop, you have to wash your face. You have to put on your best dress or suit. And you have to take the time to gather your body before you engage in prayer or in any other holy activity. It sets the mood, as it were, and it puts you into a different frame of mind so that you are truly engaged. And I'm thinking about putting actual tefillin on is a way of reinforcing that sense that you are now about to engage in a holy activity.
That's true. The problem I do have a little bit that I alluded to before is tefillin only applies to men. I mean, again, from the verse in the Torah, you don't know that. The rabbis derived that from all these connection of verses. In other words, I think the question, why does the Torah specify these two things? I don't really know exactly. could be they are important. I mean, for okay, a mezuzah does apply to men and women. That's also stressed, but I don't know. But yes, you are correct. We don't know how to put on tefillin, right? You have to be holy and whatever, you know, clean in thought, clean in body. And that's why we limit. We spoke about this a number of weeks ago. The reason we don't encourage and we discourage women from putting on tefillin, because we discourage men from putting on tefillin. Because to put on tefillin, you really have to be thinking spiritual thoughts. And we're not most people, for sure, right? That's very, very hard to do. So the rabbis would really like men not put on tefillin too. But what can you do? The Torah says you have to put on tefillin. So the rabbi says, okay, put on tefillin for half an hour in the morning when you daven. Tefillin and davening have nothing to do with each other. I'm totally unrelated. But okay, you're davening. That's also you're going to be in a spiritual mood, hopefully. So for half an hour, 25 minutes, you can think about God. So that's good. But if you don't have to do it, don't enter into that situation. Anyway, I want to move on a little bit, not talk about specifically. I just want to sort of now, so we talk about the importance Israel for sure. Now, is this true, by the way? In other words, halachically, is it true that mitzvot have less value in chutz la'aretz? So this is where sort of the, counter position, but it's a very nice idea, but I don't think it has any meaning halachically. In other words, there's nowhere in rabbinic literature that I'm aware of that suggests that doing the mitzvah of tzedakah or matzah or shofar or tefillin is of any less value, than putting it on in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know anybody who says mitzvot take on this broader thing, but I don't know. I don't myself how to sort of reconcile all these different ideas. You won't find that in any source. You'll also, of course, find that I would say probably most, this is maybe hard for people in our generation thing, the Rambam most famously, but many other people. So there is no actual mitzvah to live in Israel. There's no obligation to be mitzvah. Rav Moshe famously calls it a mitzvah kiyumit, which is a funny term, which he's not the first one to develop this idea. The Vilna Gaon has this, but it's almost an oxymoron, an optional mitzvah. Mitzvah means an obligation. So I don't have you have an optional obligation, but that's, we have this idea that by tzitzis, you don't have to wear tzitzis. If you put on a four-quarter garment, you have to put on tzitzis. So Rav Moshe says, you get a mitzvah if you live in Israel, but you don't have to live in Israel. Okay, whatever. And we know throughout history, most people were, most rabbinic authorities were opposed to the mitzvah to go to Israel, based famously on the three oaths that God make us swear, right? Everybody knows the three oaths, not should I quickly mention the three oaths? It's a fame. This is the basic of Satmar ideology today, but until the 1930s, it was the basis of most people's ideology, most rabbinic authorities. Everybody else changed and Satmar didn't move. That there's a strange Gemara, it's not quoted in any halakhic source, but the Gemara in Ketuvot, it's talking about that husband and wife can divorce each other if they don't want to move to Israel. It's an amazing Gemara. I don't want to, if one spouse wants to go to Israel and the other doesn't, spouse who wants can a divorce. Although I will point out the poskim today say that's no longer true. See, again, this whole tension, maybe in some theoretical level, but the poskim say, halacha lemaisa, that's not true today. But whatever, that's what it says in the Mishnah. There was a whole discussion about Israel, how great it is to walk 6 feet in Israel. You're guaranteed all about all these beautiful Gemaras about the great importance of Israel, for sure. And then the Gemara has this strange idea that when God exiled the Jewish people, they based it on a verse in Shir Hashirim, an interpretation of the verse, I made you swear, but not Yerushalayim, the maidens of Jerusalem, and the three oaths where we would not go to Israel en masse, we would not go to Israel against the will of the nations, and the nations would not persecute us too much. And throughout much of history, that was the sort of approach. We wait for the Messiah, we wait for the Mashiach, We don't go en masse to the land of Israel. The Megillat Esther, I think it's Moshe de Leon. I think that's who it is. I think it's de Leon. Right, his commentary on the Rambam explains that's why the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah to live in Israel, as this wild idea that the mitzvah to live in Israel ceased at exile. Just like there are mitzvot in the Torah that apply for that generation. And they, you know, when they left Egypt, there were mitzvot on Pesach only for that generation. There are mitzvot in the Torah that apply till the year 70. And then they stopped applying. And the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is one of those mitzvot. It no longer applies because we have the Gimel Shvuot. So that's, that view is rejected again a lot. But that's how he explains why the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah to live in Israel. So Satmar is still strong, very strong to that ideology. Many people disagree. What I'm just one point to bring this all together, I'm throwing it like everything in life, everything in Judaism. It's complex. Clearly, living in Israel is very important. And clearly, that's one of the goals of the Torah, maybe a major goal of the Torah. And that's the only way or the best way, I won't say the only way, the best way we can influence the nations of the world, which is an important mission of the Jews. What happened is for 1900 years of exile, we didn't worry about influencing the non-Jewish world. That, if we think about it, we didn't focus about it. When there's pogroms and persecution and Holocaust, we don't worry about being nice to the goyim and influencing them and showing them. But that's unfortunate. That's not how it's supposed to be. We are supposed to be a model state. It's very important how non-Jews look upon us. We can't ignore the non-Jewish world. We're not supposed to ignore the non-Jewish world. We're supposed to be part of the non-Jewish world and be part of the Jewish world. That's next week's mitzvah. The next week's mitzvah, the first mitzvah in the Torah to set up a Jewish calendar. We set up a Jewish calendar in Nisan. And the Netziv writes right there on the spot, many others. We have two calendars. We start the year in Rosh Hashanah. Right? What do you mean? We're Rosh Hashanah. That's not the beginning of the year. It's the seventh month. We have a dual system. One system from Nisan and one in Tishrei. And that dual system reflects the dual nature of the Jewish person. A Jew, as Rav Soloveitchik explained in a different context, is a ger and a toshav. We have our own way of life, different, but we're also part of the broader world. And you look at the tefillot of Rosh Hashanah, we start with Noach, we don't start with Avram. It's the whole world, chol ba'ei olam, everybody in the world is judged. So we, for much of our history, ignored that part of the mission for good reason. But now that we have our own state, we have to be very concerned about that mission. And that, of course, it's very important to live in Israel. But the idea that mitzvot, this Ivri, I would argue that this Ivri is not really accepted halakhically. It's a nice idea, but it doesn't really, like a lot of things, it doesn't, or either it's rejected, that's maybe too strong to say, or it just doesn't have halakhic import, that to really say mitzvot that are not tied to Israel have less authority in Israel, out of Israel, I'm not sure. I'm not sure you say that. I don't know if I'm contradicting myself, I'm confusing everybody with myself, but you see the dual aspect. It's water everywhere. I will add one thing. I'm not going to look for the source. I forgot to do it before. There is an amazing Gemara in Pesachim. I believe, maybe I'll look later. I believe it's on 87, Pezayin, if I have to check. The Gemara discussed says, why were the Jewish people exiled? Here's another one of these amazing words. So you know why we're exiled? In order that we should get converts to spread Torah. If we're living in Israel, there's no technology. There's no Zoom shiurim. So you can only influence people who are your next door neighbor. That's not good. The Jewish people have a role in the world. So the Gemara in Pesachim, one of that, that's what... as a matter of fact, Tosfot quotes this Gemara in Kiddushin when the Gemara is talking about are converts good or bad for the Jewish people. We know we have to treat converts really nice, but maybe converts create certain issues that their Gemara as a whole a sensitive. You have to discuss it in a very sensitive way, but Gemara has a whole discussion there. And Tosfot quotes there and he interprets one of the negative statements about converts. One of the rabbis gives a pretty negative statement. Converts aren't so good for us. So Tosfot says, yeah, it's because of converts we went into exile. Because God had to exile us so we could collect more converts. It's an amazing Gemara. Now, I don't think that's the... Yeah.
Yeah, Rabbi Hirsch, really, was his philosophy.
Right. When I told you, until 1930, everybody was against Zionism. You know, things are different. Things change. That's Judaism. It's a develop. It's when Torah is in motion. Torah does. It's not static. So it's true, at one point in our history, right, Shishra of Hirsch was a big anti-Zionist. I always say Hirsch is a very complex person. He's the founder of Neo-Orthodoxy. He took his school to the Swiss Alps, and they didn't have so much Gemara. And he had, you know, he taught secular studies were really important. He was anti-Kollel. Most people don't have to learn Gemara. He was very, you know, and very modern. He wore clerical robes in shul, very, all these modern things. Yet he was an anti-Zionist, and he was a big separatist, that Orthodoxy cannot work with Reform. So those two positions were picked up. The Haredi world loves those two positions of Hirsch. But the other positions of Hirsch, that was Harat Shah. He didn't really mean it, whatever. But Hirsch, like men, like all great people, they're complex. And, but it was also, I don't know what Hirsch would say if he was being alive, born 75 years later. In his time, Hirsch was a big anti-Zionist. I mean, Hirsch dies in 1888, but the next Zionist movement had started already. The Chovav Etzion, the religious Zionism, the Netziv, who basically parallels this life of Hirsch, is a big Zionist. The Netziv is a big supporter of going back to the land of Israel. Hirsch is very much against it. Okay, the Seder. So why Torah, you have to go to Achacham Asher Yeh Bayamim Haheim. Go to the rabbi of that time. We don't ask our shilas what Shintra for. We don't go to Rav Soloveitchik. You have to go to the rabbis today. And we live in a different world. Obviously, the mitzvah to live in Israel today is a much different mitzvah practically than it was 100 years ago or 100, you know, for sure. So anyways, okay, I want to move on, but I just wanted to see all the Zionism, all this stuff. It's right there in the Shema. Every day when we say Shema, and the Sifri has this amazing thing that mitzvah and chutzarts are only practiced. Whether we accept it or not, I think it's an important idea to keep in mind, just this idea. Okay, yes, anything else?
Can I ask a question? If we go beyond that, the next pasuk that Lemani Buyemechen.
What? We will get there. I hope. I don't know if we'll get there today, but we will get there. Yeah. Right.
That seems to contradict a lot of what you're saying.
It contradicts what I say?
Because it suggests that there is a connection between doing these mitzvot and being on the land.
No, there for sure is. For sure, yeah. Don't misunderstand me. The Torah for sure connects doing mitzvot to being exiled. If you don't do mitzvot, you'll be exiled. That's for sure clear. Our discussion is there a difference qualitatively between a mitzvah done in Israel and a mitzvah done here? Talking about obviously on the national level, for sure. That goes without saying. But the question is tefillin, staka, shofar, tefillah, is that fundamentally different in Chutz La'aretz or not? And I think the consensus of all great rabbinic authorities throughout the ages was it is not different. It's not different. There's no difference if you're learning Torah. Yeah, I remember my uncle once told me, the Gemara says Torah Israel is machkim. The Torah of Israel makes you wise. I remember my uncle once commented to me, he doesn't see that at all. Just doesn't see it. Like, it just doesn't think it, just not, you know, some rabbi said, whatever. It's not, we don't know that it's any different. Obviously, living in Israel is important. I told you it's so important. God doesn't even mention the Torah when he takes out of Egypt. But in this aspect, in other words, we're learning here the Shema. So the Shema says, you don't keep the mitzvot, you're going to be exiled. Yeah, that's pretty clear. You're going to be exiled, keep the mitzvot. What's the connection? Why shouldn't I keep the mitzvot? So one might have thought that you don't have to keep mitzvot. Mitzvot are only for Israel. You might have thought you would be an anti-secular Zionist. You're going to be a religious Zionist in the sense that only in Zionism, you're going to make your Zionism more important than your religion. By the way, some people do that in the secular Zionism. Obviously, they did that they don't need mitzvot. But in the religious Zionist world, from my point of view, that's a problem we often have. The overstress on the mitzvah of living in Israel. That is the most important. It's the only mitzvah in the Torah. You know, having Eretz Yisrael, Shleima, settlements, whatever. And I'm not talking from a political point of view. I mean, I might be talking about that also. But I'm talking from a religious point of view. Living in Israel, it's not like, it's very important, but it's not the only mitzvah. Maybe if the religious community has spent a lot of their efforts in educating non-religious people in chinuch and not in settlements, it'd be different. I don't know. I'm saying like Sometimes we put too much emphasis. Like Eretz Yisrael is the most important mitzvah in the world. It's I don't know. Anyways, okay, I'm going to get into trouble because people, whatever I'm going to say, I say things that upset. I'm an equal opportunity offender. You know, people on the right, on the left, whatever. But I try to say what as I understand it. I'm saying it, Israel's important. I think it's just a beautiful idea. But let's put it in perspective. The Gola Tzivri, I mean, you know, if I'll end it, maybe I'll end with two comments, sort of that. I don't think they contradict each other. I'll end, you know, I mean, how many people have seen the, I think I mentioned once before, have seen the recording of Rav Soloveitchik from the 1950s where he worries about Zionism. Has anybody seen that recording? I have to find it and send it to you. It is, when I heard it, it's really powerful, really powerful. Rav Soloveitchik basically says, you know, we Jews, we are always the underdog and we support the blacks and the, you know, we support everybody. We care for the poor. That's what Jews do throughout our history. So Rav Soloveitchik wonders, is that because we were powerless? Because Jews were persecuted, so we have a natural affinity towards others who are persecuted. But now that we've returned to the land of Israel, I think the Rebbe was talking in the 1950s, and now we have a little bit of power, how are we going to treat the people who don't have power? It's like unbelievable. And people hear it. I'm sorry?
Rabbi Lustiger, I think, posted that on his or publishing.
Yeah, it's a very important
piece to hear. It's one of them.
Yes, and we know Rav Soloveitchik was quote unquote on the left politically, and that's fine. I agree with him. You know, who am I? But it's a very powerful thing. Soloveitchik said, you know what? Yeah. How we treat the Arabs and Palestinians will determine was what we did for, was it real? Were we really nice to people? No, we just did it because we were persecuted. It's a very powerful, powerful statement about the danger of power. And perhaps if I can give my own analysis, this is why it's different today. We can't have this opinion. Of course, everything changed. But this is why throughout history, and when Zionism started, so many people were opposed, felt we weren't ready for a state. Rabbi Liebknecht has said many times, we're not ready for the Beit HaMikdash. We're so not ready for the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, I have zero desire to go to Har HaBayit. There are halakhic issues, but leaving the halakha, we're not ready for Har HaBayit. You can disagree with me. Other people want to go. It's ridiculous now. Well, let's work on the unity of the Jewish people. We're not ra'ui for the Beit HaMikdash. It's a ridiculous thing to talk about. So people said that 100 years ago. We're not ra'ui for Eretz Yisrael. Let's wait for the Mashiach. So now that's a ridiculous argument. But 150 years ago, that was a very normal argument. Made a lot of sense. Maybe I would have agreed with that. I don't know. I was, you know, so there is something to be said for that. And I think people were, you know, that's why there's a lot of upset. We're not ready. We have to wait for the Mashiach. What do you mean we have to wait for Mashiach? We'll do tshuva, do better here. Plus there's all the practical ideas, like what this weak Jew is going to set up, how we're going to have an army. That's, but if you think about it from just a religious point of view, so that's one idea. I have to find the link of the Rav and I'll try to send it. The other thing I'll end with, the Meshach Chochma, Rav Meir Simcha Vince, he died in 1926, and he was one of the people who first wrote about the three oaths, why the three oaths no longer apply, the United Nations, the Balfour Declaration, the non-Jews have persecuted us too much, whatever, even pre-Holocaust. The Meshach Chochma, actually, no, he doesn't say it, but it's basically, okay, and no, I'll say... other people say, based on the Meshach Chochma, the Meshach Chochma develops a notion that every generation has important mitzvot that historically are more important. He says it on this week's Parsha. He says it the Midrashim. Why were the Jews exiled? Why were we redeemed from Egypt? We didn't change. There are different reasons given. The most famous, although none of this, these three reasons do not exist in any one Midrash. It's a compilation, but it's the most famous one. We didn't change our name, our language, and our clothes. None of those are mitzvot. I'm Jay. I'm dressed like a Canadian, and I'm speaking in English. So I'm violating each one of the reasons we were redeemed from Egypt. From Moshe Feinstein's Tshuva, okay, in Egypt, we don't need that anymore. We have mitzvot. It's tefillin, mezuzah, Torah, tzedakah, al Shabbos, kashrut. So I don't need a Jewish, I mean, it's nice to have a Jewish, that's not the Ikar anymore. And the Meshach Chochma writes, in the generation of Egypt, they had no mitzvah, they had nothing. what kept them alive? The Magen David that they wore on their neck, the cultural tie-in. And for even nowadays, for some Jews, that work. So the Meshech Chochmah develops the idea that in every generation, certain mitzvot take on greater importance. And sometimes the greater importance is a mitzvah that's really of no importance. In other words, it's mitzvot. They're not even mitzvot. Little things that are nothing are really important historically. So that's the Meshech Chochmah develops. It's a beautiful idea. I think it's really important that that's why you have to go to the rabbis of our time. You can't quote 200 years ago. We're living today. So based on this, Rav Schachter was the first one I heard this from. Rav Schachter said, okay, so what's the mitzvah of our generation? The mitzvah of our generation is Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael after 2,000 years. So you know, I it's nice what the Sifri said, you know, 1,500 years ago and all this stuff, and what Rabbi said 200 years ago, 100 years ago, it's all very nice. But we live in the world today where we should have it. You can't argue that anymore. We have a state. We have to protect the people. We really need protection. That's obviously we all know. And so therefore that becomes the mitzvah today. Okay, let's try to move on a little bit. I didn't want to give a whole talk on Zionism, even though I just got back from Israel this week. But anyways, okay. Any very very quick questions? It's too long. I'll have to leave it for the end. Okay. Everybody's upset at me enough. They don't have anything they want
to
say.
Well, there's one question I asked you a while back you never got around to. When does God decide that we've done enough avoidance Zohar to kick us out?
I don't know. That's God. He decides. That's a simple answer. I don't know. We don't know. When we have prophets, I don't know. I don't know. God has his own calculations and, you know, and that's why it's very dangerous. That's how I started our shiur today. We don't say, because of this, God did that. We say, since God did this, what can we learn? What message? But we don't know how God operates. When there were prophets, though, the prophets could warn us. You got 70 years notice, you know, if you don't change. And generally, the prophets were less concerned with idolatry. I mean, they were concerned with that, too. They were concerned with social justice, feeding the poor. Read the Haftarot that we read, you know, on Yom Kippur or on before Tisha B'Av. They're not so concerned that we didn't eat like kosher. They're concerned that we oppress the poor, like what Rav Soloveitchik was concerned about, that we're in power. How are we going to treat the underclass, the poor, that we're going to, you know, et cetera. What does Yonah say? God saw, you know, their actions. They didn't. Anyway, so the simple answer, we have no idea how God operates. And it's I know. I mean, I understand your question. I get it. It says in the Torah, God will exile us if we do this. So we have to know when we'll exile. No, the answer is we don't have to know. We better be careful because with the next thing, God can exile us. Yeah. It's like how the Rambam writes, every Jew should see themselves as 50-50, right? That's in Hilchot Tshuva, the famous idea. Where, you know, there are tzaddikim, Rishayim, and Beinonim, right? The Aseret Yemei Tshuva is only theoretically for Beinonim. The Rambam writes, our tradition, if you're a tzaddik, you're inscribed in the Book of Life, whatever that means, because we don't really know what that means. And if you're evil, meaning you have more aveirot than mitzvot, and that's what the Rambam says, it's just a majority thing, although it's not necessarily quantitatively majority, certain mitzvot have qualitative more points, but it's a point system. And if you have more points on good, you're a tzaddik, more points bad, you're a rasha. If you're 50-50, which is next to impossible, then, okay, then you have a Aseret Yemei Tshuva. If you do tshuva, you become a tzaddik. It's like an unbelievable Rambam. And then it's based on a Gemara. Then the Rambam says, and you know what? Everybody should think that they're 50-50. And not only are you 50-50, the entire world is 50-50. It's such a beautiful Rambam. The entire world is 50-50. The next act you do will tip the scales for you and the entire world. It's a beautiful idea that every one of us makes a difference in this world. What we do makes a difference. We don't always see it. Obviously, people who are presidents, and they see it much more. But it's a beautiful Jewish idea that every mitzvah that we do tips the scales, not only for us. So I think that's what God's not going to tell us. If you do avodah zarah, if you do idols for 8 weeks in a row, no. Well, yeah, God just got to be concerned. It can happen any time. Maybe the next one you do will change the whole world. So I think that's the answer. I don't know if that.
Rabbi, can I say something? I just want to say, in terms of Israel, whenever there's a problem, a disaster, anywhere, whatever, Israel's the first one to jump and help out.
That's great. That's our role. That's what we're supposed to do. That's exactly
right. That's what we do do. And that's what we do do.
I know
the only country in the world who does that.
We do that, and yet we're still accused of genocide.
Well,
that's the sick world we live in. Yes, I understand. But yeah, absolutely. It's a great, when there's an earthquake in Morocco, we should be the first one there. When there's floods in Haiti, we're the ones who go there and deliver babies. And that's beautiful. That's a Jewish mission. That's exactly what the Torah said, that the nation would say, what an amazing nation we are. I know some people say, what are we wasting time going in? No, that's what Jews are supposed to do. Yeah, I understand that people lived in the shadow. A survivor, Holocaust survivor, may have a different view. And I totally get it. My uncle, the same uncle who told me he didn't see that the Torah of Israel makes one wiser, also told me you find all kinds of statements in our tradition. Some are very not so nice to non-Jews. We have, you can find statements that are not nice to non-Jews. If you want to be an anti-Semite, you can cherry pick them. And then you find statements that are beautiful to non-Jews. And first of all, different rabbis said, you know, if you live in the Holocaust, you're going to have a different view towards non-Jews. I always mention, Tova, you're still here. But my grandmother would say, if she ever brought in a Polish cleaning lady, my grandfather would have killed her. You know, like, cause he lost family to the Polish, and he played, you know, you have a very different attitude. I don't think that way. I was brought up in Canada. Beautiful. Everybody's so nice. You know, Canada's a nice, friendly country, you know, even more than the United States. That's our reputation. So I have very different views. But someone who unfortunately went through the Holocaust is going to have a different view towards non-Jews. So, I get it, but it's clear that the Jewish mission, absolutely, we should go to Haiti and Morocco, and we help Palestinians too. And we know that Israeli doctors treat Palestinians and even terrorists. That's a tougher question. That I don't know. That already said, I don't want to go there now, but that's what we do. There's a double standard. As Jonathan Sachs said, I remember a number of years ago when he was in Toronto, of course there's a double standard. We should be proud of that. We should be proud that we have we do expect more of us. The world expects more of Jews. It's bad, but it's also good. It's not fair, but it's good. That's what we expect of ourselves,
okay,
and that is our mission. Yes.
Then why didn't God say, instead of saying, "Well, if you do avodah zarah, I'm going to kick you out of the land," why didn't He say, "If you treat the widow and the orphan badly, I'll kick you out"?
That's a very good question. I don't know that I have a great answer, and the prophet said it more. I would also say, and I'll be like the Rambam now, historicizing part of the Torah. The Rambam people didn't like that, but the Rambam put a lot of Torah in historical context, even though the Torah applies for all time. So I would say for the generation entering the land of Israel, their biggest challenge was idolatry. They didn't have the chance of not helping each other. They got man from heaven. Like it was a different society. They were pretty united. They complained all together. But their problem was they were going to enter the land where the seven nations are there. There's idolatry all over the place. So if you look in the Torah, so much of the Torah is anti-idolatry. We read it to us. It's like no meaning to us almost. The Gemara even says we don't have we got rid of the desire to do idolatry. The Gemara is the whole thing. The sages pray to get rid of the desire to do idolatry. So half the Torah doesn't make sense to us. Like, what does this apply to us? Like, Moloch, how many people send their kid to Moloch? The Torah has all these things. What do we care? You know, when I'm so I would say, because historically the Torah was written for the generation that left Egypt and was going to enter the land of Israel, their kids. It also applies to us. That's our challenge. Or to put in a very different context, what I heard Saul Berman say, Rabbi Saul Berman, many years ago when he spoke for us in Toronto, he says how the Torah talks all about farming. Everything a farmer does, kind of mitzvah, Bikurim, Truma, Maser, Orla, Kilayim, every second, Leket, Shichicha, Peya, half the Torah is what a farmer has to do. How many? So in the year 1900, I looked this up once, year 1900, 60% of Canadians lived on a farm. 120 years ago, 60% of people lived on a farm. Today, less than 2% of people live on a farm. What does it have to do with us? Farming. Who's a farmer? And so he said, our challenge is to take farming and apply it on Wall Street. How does the mitzvah of Leket apply on Wall Street? Obviously not in a literal sense, but what does it mean? Bikurim, Truma, how does it apply in Wall Street or at Mount Sinai Hospital or at the Chvais and wherever you happen to be? So the Torah set up the mitzvot by farming, because that's what everybody did when they entered the land of Israel. Today, It does. So we, that's why I said Torah, how is, that's Torah is in motion. I said it again, I'm sorry, but you know, Torah is, have to be, I don't say updated, that has a negative connotation, like to change. It has to be applied, it has to be applied in each generation. And that's what the Meshech Chokhmah is saying. Every generation has key mitzvot. You have to know how to apply Torah. They did suggest, or to give another example, like, when you, I remember, Rav Schechter told us this too, and no one's going to accuse Rav Schechter being like this modern Orthodox, like liberal rabbi, you know, like, you know, at the partnership minion, like that's not happening. So it says, Vayhi Ra'ab Aretz, there was famine in the land, and Yitzchak wanted to go to Egypt. And God said, no, you don't go to Egypt. So he explained, I forget who he quoted a Hasidic rabbi, I don't remember who said that what I think that what did Avram, what did Yitzchak do? Yitzchak did everything his father did. His father dug wells, he dug, whatever Yitzchak. Well, our tradition, Yitzchak was the person who kept the tradition from Avram to Yaakov. He was that very important middle link. Without him, it would have died. You have a revolution, you need a period of consolidation, that's Yitzchak, and then Yaakov can take it. So Yitzchak just copies his father, there's no initiative. That's why he's called strong, Urah. It's really hard to do. He gave up his personality to copy his father. He even looked like his father, the rabbis say, right? Everything is like his father. So, no, there's foul. I'm going to do what my father did. God said, no, it's different. Times are different. Your father could go to, you can't go to Egypt. Following, and Rav Schechter would always tell us, following your Mesorah, our tradition, means you often have to change it. Just, and I remember he would say, just because your father was an Agudist doesn't mean you should be an Aguda. Or just because he was in the Mizrahi, doesn't mean you should be in Mizrahi. Times are different. So following the Mesorah, you're following the Mesorah by changing at times. So that you have to figure out. That's not always simple to know. And that's why a lot of the argument is following the Mesorah, giving women more rights religiously or less rights. Okay. I don't want to get it. I'm already into trouble, but right. What does that mean? Maybe in our generation where women's rights have changed so much. So the Mesorah would be that the halach has to respond and give women more rights, which we have done in learning Torah. So we're debating Aliyah, other things that we hasn't happened, but in Torah it has happened. So right. That's always the question. It's how to apply what's written in the Torah to our time. So Yitzchak thought he was following, or he also told us, right? So you know the famous thing. He sent Yehuda to do on a pilot trip to prepare the people as they come to Egypt. Why? Because Egypt is different than Canaan. How are you going to live? How are you going to pass on our tradition? It's a different society. You got to prepare. You got to go there. You can't just immigrate and think, where, you know what? We're living in America's different. I mean, when they asked Rav Soloveitchik, it's how come your great-grandfather, I guess your great-great-grandfather didn't see, how come he closed the yeshiva of Alashin when they introduced secular studies, which isn't true, but let's say it is true. How come they closed the Alashin yeshiva, your great-great-grandfather, and you teach in a secular university with yeshiva? So Rav Soloveitchik said, times are different. That was his answer. Times are different. It's a different world. It could be in a different generation. Rav Soloveitchik would be different. And, you know, that's, anyways, okay. It's getting late, but I want you to talk about Epinechem. That's the next thing. Teaching our children. We have to know how to teach our children, how to pass on a Mesorah. Yes, somebody wants to ask another question.
Not a question, just a comment. So you could also argue on the same line that we also have combat of Avodah Zarah, but it's not worshipping stones.
Oh, 100%. Yes, thank you for that. We have Avodah Zarah, money, honor, of course. What does Avodah Zarah mean? What you worship? The NFL playoffs
are
selling, you know, people, that's like the Super Bowl. That's like whatever. Listen, I hope the Buffalo Bills win. Okay. I'm in near Toronto, Buffalo
Bills,
you know, it's not like, okay, I don't really, you know, but anyways, it's, Rochester also hopes the Buffalo Bills win. No, in Rochester, but, I don't know. But anyways, you're right. Money is our big Avodah Zarah. So I don't know if it's technically Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah means something you worship, something comes to focus for your life. What's Avodah? That God should be the focus of life. It's hard. Worshiping God is really hard. To really worship God, to mumble words is easy, but to really worship God is very hard. Very hard. And Avodah Zarah just means strange worship. You're worshiping your central focus on life. Is something different. So it's not technically Avodah Zarah, but absolutely money, power, all those things. That's the Avodah Zarah of today. Correct. Very good. Okay. Any other comments? Or do we do quick review that, okay, we talked about it's important to live in Israel, but it's not the most important thing in the world. That's basically what I said. You know, I got to put it in perspective. On the one hand, mitzvot in chutzarts are only practiced. The goal of mitzvot is to set up a society in the land of Israel. Although God leaves out that mitzvot part of the land of Israel, just take us to Israel. Then afterwards, some part, it's just, I find fascinating. And if you have other ideas about that, please let me know. Exile is meant as punishment, which I guess, thank God, we often don't feel that, which I guess is good. It's also a tricky subject that we didn't really address so much, but the punishment is to go to exile. But clearly, the overarching value of Torah creating a society can really only be done in Israel. Mm. And although we in the Chutz La'aretz also have a responsibility to goyim, it's not just in Israel. That's that one opinion. Maybe others reject that opinion, but that opinion that, as you say, Rabbi Hirsch went with, that we're in exile in order to get more converts. By the way, which of course is sort of opposed to this idea that we were never proselytizing. So you can argue, does that literally mean geirim, or just means the literal meaning is yes, it means geirim, to actually we want to proselytize. But okay, even if we're not proselytizing, at least get them, keep the Sheva Mitzvah, B'nei Noach, etc., etc. And like everything in Judaism, it's complex. But, you know, living in Israel, you know, the balance and how much of an actual mitzvah it is, and maybe today it's the most important mitzvah, etc. That's basically that was our focus today. Okay, any other comments? And otherwise, I'm going to go teach here. What led the conservative movement to change the time but go off the track? Yeah, somebody asked me in directly. That's a very good question. And that's the fear. That's what a lot of people who don't like the more left wing of orthodoxy, whatever you want to call it, for progressive wing, they say they're just going the way of the conservative movement. Okay, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll find out. And maybe what worked, you know, maybe they're helping Jews stay. It's very complicated. Yes. I know what's bad, the conservative movement. What I like to say always was what Mark Shapiro often says is the problem with it's not only him, but the problem with the conservative movement is they never developed a religious laity. Had you had conservative Jews who were from, you know, who went to Minyan every day without a mechitza, okay, without a mechitza, fine. The mechitza is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. So they went to Minyan every day and they davened and they kept Shabbos. They drove to Shul. That's already an extreme, but even let's go that far. You didn't have that. And they kept kosher. And what happened is the conservative movement just said Jews, it was an excuse not to be religious. So it failed. There's more to discuss here, but it's sad. It's sad that it failed. It's not good. The back of the conservative movement, by the way, I've mentioned many times, the Baal Tshuva movement is greatly affected because most Baal Tshuva came from the conservative movement, some from the reform, and that we don't have it is very bad. And it's bad even not for the Baal Tshuva. It's bad on its own sake. I don't want conservative Jews to disappear and assimilate and all that, but even I'm from a, there's the additional factor. Okay, when we have a national state, somebody else writing to me privately and accomplish many events ought to be impressed. Yeah. Yeah, the world is angry. Yeah, yeah, we haven't reached there yet. Okay. Okay, I do have to go and teach here in chat. Our vacation is over. And teaching is a vacation, but okay, it's a different type of vacation. And anyways, okay, I think many of you saw like our some of our new classes starting this week, and we look forward to seeing you, and I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom, and thank Shabbat you very much. Shalom. We're always here, Shabbat Shalom, and all good things, and
Shabbat
okay,
Shalom, and everybody.
Shabbat
Shalom, thank you. Shabbat Shalom, okay, be well, everybody. Thank you very much, bye-bye.
Shabbat Shalom.